All right, you can have a seat.
It was just that good, by the way. How many of you have the sense of, let's get on with it? Okay, we got it. It's not what I'm doing, it's when I'm doing it. That's the issue. It's not the content of my behavior, it's that the timing's off. Nobody would say what I was doing right now is bad. It's just kind of, it's not time for it. Doherty, this moment is for something completely more and other. It's not the what, it's the when. And I think that many of us know deeply that there's a time for things. And many of us, we don't realize that we believe this, but more than even morality or immorality discussions. What really irks us is when somebody doesn't recognize how important a moment or a season is. I mean, you've had friends that you recognize they've got their toes on the line of something brilliant, beautiful, life-changing. And they won't step into it. And you're so frustrated. But they're not being immoral. They're just missing it. They won't step into it. See, deep down, I think, in the human heart, because that heart was formed by who God is, what bothers us so badly is when somebody puts insignificance into the time slot that belongs to the sacred. Or somebody puts something petty and superficial in sacred's time slot. Because it's not the what, it's the when. You recognize this moment is for so much more. Step into it. Step into it. And you have a tension. Even though you know it was a setup, there's a tension. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. This moment means more than how you're treating it. We're going to wrap up a series that we've been in for 6 weeks now, Stuff Jesus Made Up. Jesus continues over and over and over and over to say, let me tell you what the good news is. It's the kingdom. What was blocked for you, I'm now throwing open with who I am, with my life, my death, my burial, and my resurrection. Where there used to be a barricade, there is now an entrance because of me. That's the good news. I'm giving you your lives back forever. And he teaches us in so many ways that in one sense, he'll come out and he'll say it plainly. And in another, he tells us these parables so that you and I have to continue talking about it for thousands of years. Pulling back the layers and discovering more and more beauty every time we pull back a layer over and over. Sometimes even the way he heals people is like, it's like theater. It's a lived parable so that we'll get it and discuss it and pass it on and live it. And today we're going to wrap up a series, and we're going to be in Luke chapter 13. If you've got a Bible, that's the third book of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke. If you get to John, just back up one. And we're going to start in Luke 13, and then we're going to end with another parable. And we're going to talk about something, and it's rooted in this. Now, while the ushers have come forward and we're going to do the offering thing, I want you to pay really close attention to this piece right here, because this is critical. This message is intentionally vague in general. This message is rooted in a trust that every one of you matters to God in ways that you don't comprehend, and I don't care if you're a pastor at your own church, you don't even understand. You matter to God so much. You are worth so much to your Creator that there is something for you that you just keep, it's beyond our wildest imagination. And that's not only true, but this message is rooted in a sense that since that is true, he's trying to tell you. Every single person in here, if you listen, some of you know exactly what I'm getting at. Some of you, you're still a little foggy. But every one of us in this room has been created by a God that is relentless in his pursuit of us, trying to get us to see what he can see. And I can't tell you what to do. I can't connect all the dots and put it all together for you. And I know in the front of your brains, that's not why you came here. But you're going to leave here challenged to go listen in ways that maybe you've never listened before. Because every one of us in this room are worth so much to our Creator that if we could see ourselves the way that he sees us, it would blow our minds. And so we're going to be in Luke chapter 13, verse 6. The parable reads this way. A man had a fig tree. What kind of tree? Not just a tree, but a fig tree planted in his vineyard. You go back through like Isaiah 5, the vineyard motif. That's like, these are my people. So the Hebrew mind would have heard vineyard and went, oh, okay, we're talking about this. These are the people that God is gathering, putting together. He had a fig tree planted in his vineyard. And he went to look for fruit on it, but he didn't find any. So he said to the man who took care of the vineyard, look, for 3 years now, I've been coming to look for fruit on the fig tree, and I haven't found any. You know what? Cut it down. Why should it use up the soil? The Greek terminology that translates into English here, it's why should this tree be exhausting the soil? Why should this tree be depriving the soil? I've come to it. It's supposed to be producing fruit. What kind of fruit? Because it's not just a tree. This is a fig tree. Where's my frigs? Frigs? Wow. I think that was Freudian. Wow. That was so close to a really bad moment for me. Where's my fig and fruit? Woo! I swear to you, it was chips. That was not in my heart. I am completely off the rails, by the way. Why should it exhaust the soil? There's supposed to be figs on this fruit tree. I keep coming to it, there's no figs. Why should it deprive the soil? It's not doing what its name suggests it should be doing. Why should it deplete the soil? Sir, the man replied, leave it alone for one more year and I'll dig around it and fertilize it. Is there another slide? Nope, not that one. I think this is going well. What do you think? See, we work out all the kinks first hour, and you get the polished version. Why should it use up the soil? Sir, the man replied, leave it alone for one more year and I'll dig around it and fertilize it. If it bears fruit next year, fine. Then, if not, cut it down. Now, traditionally, I think a lot of people think that this parable is a picture of a really, you know, cranky God the Father and the hippie God the Son. And God, I know that you like to just torch people and not ask any questions, but just let me do my thing. This isn't a tension within the Trinity. I think this is a tension within just God's own mind between his justice and his mercy. That in one sense, you are a fig tree. You're in my vineyard. Where's my figs? And I love you. And I want to bless you. And notice that it's not a threat to the tree. It's not grabbing the tree by the trunk and shaking it. Let me bless you even further. Let me aerate the roots. Let me fertilize you. Because when I see a deficit, I don't want to just make you feel bad about it. Let me continue to bless you. So you know, I think what you need to know is I am crazy about you. I love you. I love you. I love you. I got justice and I got mercy that I've got to contend with in dealing with my creation. Something else that's interesting in this parable is the word Jesus uses that's translated in English, leave it alone. Sir, leave it alone in verse 9. That word is actually the slide that you saw. It's the Greek term aphiemi. Now, the reason that this is an interesting word to me is most every other time that this word is used, it's translated forgive. Every time Jesus says and talks about forgiveness, it's this word. Sir, forgive it. Forgive the tree. You and I both know it's a fig tree. Forgive it. Don't cut it down. Let's bless it even further. Let me aerate the roots. Let me fertilize it and make sure it understands that we want it to succeed. We want it to do what only fig trees can do. Let me bless it. Forgive it. Let me bless it further. Now, the Jewish mind hearing this, what makes the Jewish mind in the first century, is a pretty comprehensive knowledge of God's word. The Torah, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the first five books of your Bible. This is really at the center of what it means to be a Jewish man or woman. And these are Jewish men and women listening to Jesus' parable. So there's some things that work on an assumption level. They're so ingrained in the mind. And one of those things, as soon as you hear about fruit trees that you would have in your mind as a good Jewish man or woman, is Leviticus 19. It reads this way. When you enter the land and plant any kind of fruit tree, regard its fruit as forbidden. For 3 years, you're to consider it forbidden. It must not be eaten. In the fourth year, all its fruit will be holy, an offering of praise to Yahweh, to the Lord. But in the fifth year, you may eat its fruit. And this way, your harvest will be increased. I am Yahweh, the Lord, your God. So this principle is enacted by Jewish men and women for thousands of years after the time that this is written. So when you plant a fig tree, you have something that's going to be, after some time, a sapling. Saplings don't produce figs. That sapling will grow, and you're going to need to give this tree about 3 years before it's mature enough to produce a fig. Now, once they start producing figs, once they reach maturity, a fig tree will produce fruit up to about 10 months out of the year. There's a couple months that it goes dormant, but for the vast majority of the year, fig trees produce fruit. But it needs a few years to get to fruit-bearing age. So 2 or 3 years. Then, once it starts to produce fruit, you're not to touch that fruit as an act of trust and as an act of letting it do its own thing before you start taking from it for 3 years. And then in that fourth year, that's an offering to God. And then fifth year, you're allowed to eat it. So you have a tree that's 6 or 7 years old before you can start to eat from it. The owner of the vineyard says, I've been going to this tree for 3 years now. For 3 years, I've been within my rights to take fruit from this tree. We're talking about a tree that's been in this vineyard for about a decade. It has been around the vineyard. It has been around the master of the vineyard. It has been around the vine dresser, the keeper, for 10 years drawing from the soil, absorbing sunlight, taking its share of rain, taking, taking, taking. And for the past 3 years, it hasn't stepped up to do what fig trees do. It hasn't produced any figs. Where's my figs? Why should it be depleting the soil like all the other trees, but it's not producing anything? There's a time for trees to take. As they come to maturity, they need to. They're getting their roots situated. They're trying to figure out who they are as a tree. They're trying to figure out their place in the vineyard. They're watching the other trees and the grapevines, and they're in awe. Like, man, look at them go. That'd be cool if that's who I was. There's a time for that tree to not be able to produce anything. Literal, authentic immaturity, not ready to do it yet. There's a time every year, even for mature trees, to say, I'm not going to be able to produce fruit if I don't take care of myself and draw the nutrients I need from the soil and the sun and the rain to really make sure that I'm whole within myself so that I have something to give the rest of the year. There's a time for that. There are rhythms. There are weekly, monthly, and yearly rhythms where the tree has to do that or it doesn't have the capacity to bear the fruit. Dormancy is required for plants, for trees. But you cannot stay that way. Sooner or later, the expectation is that all that you have absorbed is now a blessing for the world around you. The implication of being and having access in the vineyard, taking your place there, the implication is that you begin to transition from primarily a taker, an absorber, to a giver, to one that plays according to its name. Note that the master comes expecting. It's a fig tree. It's a healthy expectation. It comes saying, you're a fig tree. Where's my figs? For 3 years now. You're ready, tree. You're ready. Notice that he doesn't come and say, hey, you're producing poison fruit. Notice that the master of the vineyard doesn't come and say, hey, cut it down. It's cussing out the other trees. It's not playing well with the grape vines. The issue is it's not stepping into its design. Where's my figs? Where's my figs? You've been here now for a decade. It's well past time for you to play to your strengths. But somehow this tree has stayed its whole life in mere existing mode. Somehow, even though it recognizes I am blessed to be in this vineyard, somehow it's settled for merely existing. Well, I got leaves. My roots were good. It's settled for merely existing. It thinks it's arrived because it has being. But that's the thing, is that the trees that accept access to the vineyard, life in the vineyard, recognize that you can't do it year round, but after you go through a period of rest and dormancy and growth and absorbing what you need from the soil, it's time to turn and spend most of your time blessing the world around you. Where you go from a passive existence, where you have a passive life, to a dynamic one that takes what you've absorbed and blesses with it, that spends most of your existence giving yourself away, that employs kingdom behaviors where we begin to ask questions not about how much more can I take in and hear and listen and observe, where you go from that to giving yourself to the world around you, to submitting yourself not only to your master, but to your master's design. Where fig trees say, I've got a job to do if I'm going to carry this title, fig tree. I've got something that I have got to step into if I'm going to continue to have myself rooted in the vineyard's soil. I have a role to play. There comes a moment a profoundly serious moment where you go from immature, from taking, from a life that primarily absorbs, to a very robust life of giving yourself to others and to the Master. But there's some questions that we have to ask about that. As we come to recognize that you can listen to sermons and you can listen to podcasts and you can read books and magazines and blogs and you can go to seminars and you can hear and all this really good information. You can have really great conversations with other people and you can even have debates and you can even carry with you a sense, this holy hunch or whatever you want to call it, that comes from a time of prayer or somebody said and then somebody else said and two different people who don't know each other said the same thing. All of that is really holy, sacred, and cool, but it only really has value if you put feet on it. You can absorb all of those things, but it only has value if it equals your life changing and that you go from passive to dynamic, that you take up your role in the vineyard. And so a couple of questions to ask ourselves as we consider all that we have heard, all that we've seen, all that we've bumped up against, is my life, and just ask yourself this question, is my life primarily about absorption or about bearing fruit? Like, what makes you tired when you're like, I just need a rest, I need to check out? Did the thing that make you tired, was that about you? Now there's a rhythm to that. You have to take care of you or you can't bear fruit. But do you find yourself tired from serving yourself? And so then you go check out and go into dormancy for yourself? Like what are the characteristics of you going into dormancy and then you coming on? What does it look like and when and why and all that? There's another question. If you were to be cut down, if you were to be dug up, if you were to be removed from the vineyard, whatever that would look like, what no longer happens? Ask that question as an individual. Ask it with whoever you're doing life with. Maybe it's your life group. Maybe it's people you have coffee with. If you cease to have a place in the vineyard, what ceases to happen? What's the cost? See, I think there's a theme. For the last 6 weeks, you know, Jonathan launched us into this whole thing. We're talking about, you know, hey, God, we played our flute for you. We sang a dirge. You're supposed to do your thing. We did this and we expect that you're going to behave in kind. And so we go to God with all these expectations of what we think God is or isn't, and stuff we've been told by others, things that we've just, conclusions we've come to, various books we read or whatever. And we have these expectations of God. And the implications of that message is that we would go and we would explore what our expectations were. Do they align with reality? And we talked about forgiveness. And we see this picture of forgiveness that Jesus gives. Oh, man, that's challenging. But really, I want to be the kind of person that can let things go and that can actually pass on the forgiveness I've been given in Christ to other people. And then we talked about, what does it look like to be a prodigal son that comes home? Do you grow up to be like dad that went out and hugged him? Or are you going to be like the older brother that just didn't want anything to do with it and was content to just be a rule follower? And then after that, we talked about Lazarus being laid at the gate outside the wall, and that Jesus seems to emphasize Lazarus, not the rich man, as being the person he's really watching. And to grow close to Jesus is to pursue the Lazaruses all around us. And then last week, we talked about the chair game and all the ways that we compete for position and role and rank and accolades and all those things. And all of those, you know, listen, this is, sounds a little self-important, but lots of people say, oh man, really challenging, really helping me to see what Jesus was talking about and all this stuff. There's a theme. Is we hear it and we think it's beautiful. There's a theme where we absorb it because, oh, I want this. Look at beyond this past series, messages that have had to do with getting things right with your family and taking it seriously, getting things right in your marriage and as a parent or as a son and daughter, a brother and sister, making that job decision, whatever that is, the decision to do that. where finances are concerned. I think we do a really good job of not being weirdos about money with church. Like, that's been done. We've all seen the weird videos and all the stuff that have to do with faith and money, and it's confusing and it's been damaging. I think we do a really good job. And there's a lot of us that go out and we brag on Crosspoint, but we don't fund it. And so we've got this sense from a message or hearing Jesus, yeah, I want to not just brag. I want to fund what God is doing in and through this community. We would talk about things like addiction, things that have broken us, that we just continue to embrace behaviors that we would never sell to somebody as a good idea. We talk over and over and over about things that we need to do. What about a class that I need to take? What about going to counseling and digging around and stuff that happened to me so I can finally get my brain around that? What does it look like to talk to other people about what I'm becoming and doing in Jesus? And I no longer care if you think I'm being fanatical. This is real. This isn't just something I talk about on Sunday. This is real. All the ways that we've talked about where you live and what you buy and forgiveness issues and needing to go apologize and going and studying and having a time of prayer and living in rhythm and having disciplines that make you look more like the Christ that you're pursuing in some measure. All of those things that we've talked about in here that you've heard, that you've read, other stuff that you've listened to. The theme is recognizing the beauty in it. Jesus is utterly attractive. And we continue to orient our life around absorbing that. The question is, will we then produce fruit? Well, I still have some questions. There's some stuff I don't know there. Will we move from absorbing to some of us depleting the soil to living by our design? And the reason so many of us won't do this is because you think what I'm doing right now is the equivalent of daddy telling his kids, eat your vegetables. But they're yucky. I know, but they're good. Eat them. I don't want you eat them. I know they're good for me, but I don't. You eat them right now, or no free coffee. A lot of people look at the role of what we're doing up here is eat your vegetables ministry. Everybody's like, yeah, I know it's beautiful and I know it would be good, but I just don't want it. I would just rather do what I'm doing right now. And paradoxically, I still want like the self-help mentality. Somebody help me out. I recognize Jesus' way is beautiful. I don't want to do it. I'll be associated with those people. I'll do this. I got an unanswered question, all of that stuff. I know vegetables aren't yummy, but they're good for you. But I'm going to go with the not yummy part. I'm just not going to do it. But listen, I think there's two things that you need to understand. And let me rephrase that, that we need to understand, that I need to understand more deeply, is that the master comes to the fig tree knowing what it's capable of. Your God is not asking the fig tree to produce apples. He knows what is in you because he put it there. And what if all of heaven and all of the angels feel the way you did as you watched me eat these chips? Come on. Come on. Don't you understand who wired you? Don't you understand who it is that's inviting you? Don't you understand the one that's saying, if you'll cross this line, it's going to hurt, but look what's coming. Come on and step into the moment. I don't think you and I fully understand that the master knows what's in us because he put it there. And secondly, I don't think that you and I understand just how beautiful the kingdom is. It sounds like an invitation to just eat our vegetables. But over and over and over, Jesus, through straightforward teaching and through parables, says the kingdom is like a treasure hidden in a field. And once the dude finds out that there's treasure in the field, he liquidates everything he has and buys that field because he sees the value in it. That's what the kingdom's like. Once you get a glimpse, once you get a taste, once you barely catch the scent in the air, you're going to recognize there's nothing more important, beautiful, and significant than the kingdom. Your creator put something in you. You are wired for worth. And if you're in this room right now and you think that my word went to the left and to the right of you just then, I honestly believe every single one of us is being invited into something dynamic, something brilliant, something beautiful and yet painful, something uncomfortable, but we recognize in the discomfort it's going to stretch and challenge and grow us. Honestly, are there really going to be some of us that exempt ourselves from this? No, I really think my calling in life is merely existence. And I'm telling you, I think the angels in heaven are like, come on. It's time. It's time to step into this moment. It's time to stop putting the petty and the insignificant into the time slot of sacredness. It's time. The Master knows what's in you, and the Master knows that the kingdom is absolutely worth it. And if you can get just a glimpse of that, you're going to find that it's time. It's when you don't think something is desirable, it becomes way more suited for delay. Yeah, that'd be great, but I'm going to watch. I'm just going to absorb. I'm just going to take. Once you get a glimpse of how utterly desirable the way of Jesus is, everything changes. Everything changes. And you begin to hear God saying, I am with you in this. I am asking you to do something I wired you to do. I'm asking you to become something I've been dreaming up since the beginning of time. Will you step into it? Will you step out of a season of taking and wondering and waiting for somebody to sell you on being what you are? The implication is that being in the vineyard is a I will. And Jesus tells another parable in Matthew chapter 21. He says, what do you think? And he's asking you. Maybe you can answer him later. What do you think? There was a man who had two sons. And he went to the first and said, son, go and work today in the vineyard. Nope. But later he changed his mind and went. See, at first I have no desire to do this, Dad. That's not what I'm doing. I'm busy with other things. I'm not going to do this. But he changed his mind. It means he thought about it. He wrestled with it. He chewed on it. Should I trust my dad? And wait, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. He had no intentions to do it, but he changed his mind. Maybe he talked to some other people. Maybe he prayed about it. Maybe he went back and had other conversations with Dad. Maybe he looked in the mirror and said, wait a minute, I'm not playing at all to who I am in this family. And he changed his mind and he went. Then the father went to the other son and said the same thing. And he answered, yeah, sure, you bet. But did not go. It's interesting, he didn't change his mind. I don't think he ever had any intentions of doing it. But by all appearances, he looked like somebody that was going to go do it. He was one of the workers in the vineyard. I mean, he's right there next to the father. He has access to all the same information. He's hearing all the same stuff. Yeah, sure. The implication is that he was going to do it. He never had any intentions of doing it. Which of the two did what his father wanted? Jesus asked. The first, they answered. The one after some reflection realized, the father's worth trusting. I'm going to work. I changed my mind. What would it look like if we changed our minds and we stepped in to a moment? If we took our doubts and our questions, all the affiliations that we have in our brain, is this going to be intellectual suicide? And what if I get hurt? And I'm not sure I'm ready. And I can't, and I won't, and I can't, and I won't. What if we took all of that with us and stepped out of take from the soil mode, take just what I need, maintenance my life, merely existing, and stepped into something completely other? An entirely new way of living. What if we began to believe about ourselves what the Master's believed about us all along? Wait, he says this is in me. I don't see it. I'm not even sure I believe everything he says. But this way isn't working. And so I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to produce some figs. What if we believed about ourselves what the Master believes about us? I think that many of us are waiting for this moment where all the lights go on. We're waiting for an invitation to go from one season of dormancy into a season of dynamic growth. And I don't mean to sound arrogant, But there you go. Here's your moment. Go have the conversation today. Go make a phone call. Go make the prayer. Go set an appointment with... This is the moment where you say, ah, I can't just exist anymore. The Father says there's something in me. And he says that the kingdom is worth it. And I'm never going to discover that if I don't step into it. I've got all the information I need. Here I go. This is a moment. Not this second. Don't come up here. Today's the day. I think they out there, whoever they are waiting to see what our being firmly rooted in the vineyard actually does. I don't think they're asking, hey, is the Bible true after all? Hey, is your faith true? Is all the stuff that you believe and sing about and say, is that all true? They're not asking that. They're wanting to see if those of us that have taken a position and rooted ourselves in the soil of the Master's vineyard, they're waiting to see if we're going to produce what our name suggests. If we're seeking that we would be recognized by our seeking. If we carry the name Christian, that the word Christ is going to pop up a lot for people. That the way that we live with our family and at work and the rhythms that we employ, all those things, they're watching. They want to see if this matters. Are those people that, is that just another club that absorbs information and trades notes? Or is this a people that change the world by what they produce? I think they're watching, not to see if it's true, but to see if it's real. And we can't make that real in here. We have to go out and do that behind Jesus together. Let's pray. Father, take what I put out there generally and make it specific. Take lofty ideas that are that seem vague if we leave them there, and turn them into sincere questions that we would ask of you on our own and in the people we do life with. That we would take you seriously enough to allow you to speak into our existence. That we would note that you come to each of us expectantly. That there are things that we have denied you, and when we denied it, we accepted something else, because that's how it works. And so show us what we accept when we deny your invitation. Show us what we settle for when we decide that we're not going to put ourselves out there, that we're just content to sit here and absorb, that we spend our life just kind of taking. God, show us what it means to be the kind of people that if suddenly we weren't here, there'd be this gaping hole in the world. That's a responsibility, and that's a discomfort, but that's a beauty, and that's a meaning that we really want to give ourselves to. So help us to trust what you see in us. Help us to trust that the kingdom is more spectacular and beautiful than anything that we would settle for. And may we follow you anywhere that you lead us to.